Mr. Cowan, glad to hear from you, sir.
May it please the court, I am Don Cowan. I am the lawyer for Mr. Boone. This court has just heard a habeas case from North Carolina, and this is another habeas case. If it please the court, this court knows on review from Judge Beatty, just like Judge Beatty's standard of review, this is de novo. But I believe it's very important to start because the deferential standard to state court decisions has two parts for review by this court. Number one, this court does not review a state court decision on an MAR, a habeas, unless the state court, number one, decision is contrary to or an unreasonable application of, number two, clearly established federal law. And I want to talk briefly with the court about both of those standards and why they are present in this case.
Doesn't that cut against you if those standards apply here?
The standards apply because the MAR court's decision is contrary to clearly established federal law, and I can explain my position on that if Your Honor please.
That's a pretty high bar, isn't it?
It is a high bar, but let me, I think I understand Your Honor's question, but this is a Fifth Amendment claim that was squarely presented to Judge Craig, the MAR court. And what we think is the contrary to clearly established federal law is Judge Craig, the MAR judge, in addressing the Fifth Amendment claim, addressed only the first prong, the voluntariness. And
Judge Beatty recognized that.
Judge Beatty recognized that.
He went both ways. He did an EDPA review and he did a de novo.
Well, it's interesting, and we're jumping ahead. At some point during this argument, we're going to talk about the Cullen versus Penholster case, a case by the Supreme Court this year. What Judge Beatty did is he looked at what Judge Craig did, and he addressed both the voluntariness, no police coercion, but it's our contention that when he applied the second prong, which is the one we're really here about, knowing and intelligent waiver, that he went off on a different standard from both the Sixth and Seventh Circuit that were relying on the Colorado versus Connolly case. And we argue strongly in our brief that that's error, and I would like to tell the court why. And I think this comes back, Judge Wilkinson, to your initial question. If you look, and this was the question that came out in the previous argument, we're looking at decisions of the United States Supreme Court. And if you look at two leading cases that this court has followed, and I'm going to talk about the Robinson case, if you look at both Colorado versus Spring, and if you look at last year's decision in Burkus versus Tompkins, the U.S. Supreme Court says there are two prongs to a Fifth Amendment challenge. Spring case, the court says that the state, for having a valid waiver, the state has to show, for the knowing and intelligent waiver, an awareness of the rights being abandoned and an understanding of the consequences of that waiver. And then you go forward to last year.
It's kind of an overlap between voluntary and intelligent.
No, sir.
I mean, there's a distinct element. They're also very closely related.
I'm going to agree with your first characterization. They are distinct because all of the cases on the voluntariness prong of the Fifth Amendment talk about government coercion, and that's what the MAR judge in the Boone case talked about. But he never addressed the second prong, and that's why.
I worry sometimes about breaking up these claims into little segments and parts because, again, there's another device that you to undercut EDPA. The argument is that when a state court makes a ruling and rejects a claim, then say, well, but the reasoning didn't address this particular part of it. But the point is, the state MAR court ruled on the admissibility and lawfulness of the confession. And it would not have admitted that confession had it thought for a minute that it was unintelligent.
It was, well, let's make sure which state. Are you talking about the state trial court or the state MAR court?
Well, both admitted it.
Okay. They both admitted it, but the state trial court never had the entire mental deficiency, mental retardation claim before it because of incompetence, ineffectiveness of the counsel. But let me come back and respectfully tell Your Honor where there are distinct elements to the Fifth Amendment claim. In last year's decision in Tompkins, I would submit that the United States Supreme Court directly addressed Your Honor's question. The Supreme Court said if the state establishes that a Miranda warning was given and the accused made an uncoerced statement, this showing standing alone is insufficient to demonstrate a valid waiver. The prosecution must also make the additional showing that the accused understood these rights, and that is the contrary to clearly established federal standards. Neither the MAR judge, because he had it squarely presented to him, Dr. Ali testified and submitted affidavits to the state MAR judge about Mr. Bone's mental retardation and the fact that he didn't understand the Miranda warning. He was incapable. He was incompetent.
That was presented to the MAR court?
Absolutely.
Okay, so if the MAR court had been persuaded by that, he would have ruled in your favor.
But the MAR court says, and I think this addresses Your Honor's first question, the MAR judge says, I don't have to face the knowing and intelligent waiver. The only thing I have to find is there was no police, no government coercion. The MAR judge never applied the clearly established federal standard of knowing and intelligent waiver. The judge never did it. But unlike, as I understand the case before you, in this case, the MAR judge had squarely presented to him the evidence on knowing and intelligent waiver, and he did not apply clearly established United States decision.
Well, but if he had actually thought that the waiver was unintelligent, it's inconceivable that that confession would have been admitted either at trial or on collateral attack. I mean, I can't conceive of any judge in the country admitting a confession that thought was unintelligent. This would not happen.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, haven't you just answered the reason I'm here? If a judge were faced with the evidence on the record that, number one, ineffective counsel did not establish at the trial court level, but were squarely presented to the MAR judge, it's exactly what you've just said. There is no knowing and intelligent waiver. Now, if I could, and I think this is continuing the thread, Your Honor, Judge Wilkerson, that you've been talking about, in this court's decision in the United States versus Robinson case, I think this court squarely anticipated the Tompkins case and the Cullen versus Penholster case because in the Robinson case, this court said there's nothing in the record indicating that the accused could not understand his rights. And when Judge Agee addressed the Robinson case, and I know we don't rely on district court judges to interpret Fourth Circuit cases, but Judge Beatty said if you look at what this court said in Robinson, this court was viewing knowing and intelligent waiver from the subjective position of the defendant and not from the perceptions of police officers. Now, let's look at the other thing.
We're making this so much more complicated than it needs to be. We have a state trial judge that admitted the confession. We have a state MAR court that thought the confession was okay. We have a federal district judge that gone through it and believed the confession was okay, and then we have all these responses to Ollie when Ollie says, what does it mean you have a right to remain silent? And the defendant says, well, it means you don't have to talk. And he said, in another case, well, this means you need a lawyer. When he asked, said, when are you entitled to a lawyer? He said, any time. When asked the meaning of consult, Bone replied, take counsel and call me to talk to me and ask questions. He said, I also understand that if you spit, which means to talk, then you're in a whole lot of trouble. Put more colloquially than that, I won't mention those. So in addition to overturning the state courts, wouldn't we have to rule that the district court's view that Bone understood his rights was clearly erroneous?
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't we?
Yes, sir.
You're saying he's clearly erroneous?
Yes, sir. Because he applied the wrong test, and he didn't follow what this court said. Your Honor has presented several courts in a row, if I could respond to. And I want
you're
to be...
You're going to tell us the test, and Judge Beatty should have followed it.
He did. He should have followed Colorado versus Spring. He should have followed Burkus versus Tompkins. He should... Now, let me slow down, and I think I'm answering your question. Cullen versus Penholster says that the record for Judge Beatty is limited to that available to the state court. So even though Judge Beatty heard evidence again from Dr. Ollie and from Dr. Hazelrig and Detective Saul, Cullen versus Penholster says he can't rely on evidence that was not presented to the state MAR judge. And the only evidence presented to the state MAR judge was Dr. Ollie's testimony and Dr. Ollie's opinion. Now, the standard, Judge Agee, that Judge Beatty should apply, Judge Beatty went to the Sixth and Seventh Circuit opinions on what he called the police focus test. We argue that is legal error that he made. Okay, let's talk about Robinson, because again, this is a de novo view. In Robinson, what this court said was, we reject the argument by the defense that mental deficiency per se means no knowing and intelligent waiver. But look at the record, and I think that's very important. Look at the record in Robinson. An IQ of 74 to 90 over the course of time, an eighth grade at the time of these offenses. He was in...
What do we do with these responses?
What would you... with?
Well, the you'd say we have to just go by the IQ?
No. No. Because that's what you rejected in Robinson, and that's not my argument. My argument is, number one, what Judge Beatty said, the only evidence he had on the ultimate question was from Dr. Ollie, and he credited Dr. Ollie's expert opinion that Mr. Bone was incapable of knowing and intelligently waiving his Miranda rights. And let me talk about the difference in the Robinson record, and I think this is Judge King's question. In the Bone record squarely presented to the MAR judge, you have an IQ of 63 from Dr. Coleman. You have an IQ of 69 by Dr. Ollie that Judge Craig specifically said, I credit. Then what else you have from Dr. Ollie that Judge Craig, in setting aside the death sentence, credited is from the first grade. We brought in a first grade teacher of Mr. Bone. From the first grade, Mr. Bone had been put in what they call educable mentally retarded, because under a North Carolina statute to have a death sentence set aside, you have to show that the mental retardation existed.
These Miranda warnings are structured and given in a way that everyone can understand. If they were more complicated, they're not like a product liability warning. They're not like a the stuff you get with your prescription drugs, which tells you, you know, 15 different side effects and interactions and everything else. These, you know, they're not hard. You have a right to remain silent. You have a right to have a lawyer. You have a right to have a lawyer appointed for you. And they were deliberately fashioned by the warrantor in a manner that everyone could understand.
That's not the evidence in this case. And I'm always reluctant to disagree with Your Honor, but that's not the evidence in this case. And if you look
at... the evidence in this case is that he didn't.
It's absolutely not, Your Honor. And my time's running out, but I want to answer your question because it's the most important thing in the record that the Robinson case court says. If you look at joint appendix pages 122 through 123, Dr. Ali says the Miranda warning is geared at a 7.9 grade intelligence level. Mr. Bone had a 2.4 grade level. And then the other thing he said is the confession that Detective Saul wrote was written at a fifth grade comprehension level, twice the capacity of Mr. Bone. And the last thing I want to say, because I do want to...
Evidence that was presented to the MAR court or
yes, sir.
To the district court?
It was presented to the MAR court because the joint appendix pages have the North Carolina court case filing.
Which court?
Okay. The last thing I want to say is, Your Honor recalled part of Mr. Bone's comment about the Miranda warnings. Mr. Bone also, in the same Dr. Ollie affidavit, says, yes, I was told I could not talk, but I understood that to mean that if I did not talk, it would be held against me. And Dr. Ollie also said that when he signed the Miranda waiver, Mr. Bone thought he was requesting a lawyer. So he did not understand. It was beyond his comprehension. And I do want to reserve whatever time I have left, if it pleases the court.
Yes, sir. You have some rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. This man testified for 20 to 30 pages in the trial transcript. He listened to the questions of the attorneys, the defendant, the petitioner, Anthony Bone. He testified at his trial. He testified in his own defense for 20 to 30. And he understood, and the lawyers asked him questions, and the prosecutor tried to trick him. He tried to trick him. He would talk about one subject, and he'd say, oh, by the way, did you go in head first or feet first through the window? And he didn't buy it. He didn't go for it. This man understood. He understood. He may not be, he's retarded, and he may not be brilliant, but he understood what was going on here. And he also, Colorado versus Spring was complied with here. Colorado versus Spring requires three things. It requires that the defendant know that he has a right to remain silent. He has to know that he has a right to a lawyer to talk with before interrogation and have with him while he's interrogated, and a right to stop the questioning at any time. The answers that this man gave on that Grizzo test to both Dr. Ollie and Dr. Hazelrig showed that he had that understanding. He said, what is it to be, have the right to remain silent? He said, you don't have to talk, like Your Honor just said. And then he said, what about the right to have a lawyer with you during interrogation? And he said, it means you need a lawyer. What does consult mean? It means to talk with you, ask you questions. And then the fundamental question, do you understand that what you say can be used against you in a court of law? And he said, if you spit, your blank is fried. And that's just a perfect representation of what is required.
Is there any question about this? I realize this is a different question than voluntary and intelligence, but any question about the reliability of the confession?
The reliability of the confession?
Yeah, I mean, was some confession was just...
Oh, the false statement issue. That
or just for various reasons, no, not reliable.
Well, this confession was reliable because the facts did match up.
Was it independent corroboration?
Well, the facts of the case were that the assailant did go through the window.
Reference in the confession of particular details that
yes, Your Honor.
Intrinsically corroborated.
Yes, Your Honor.
What?
The fact that he cut through that the assailant went through the window, went into the house, spilled the purses on the table, spilled the purses on the floor in the living room, that the curtain was ripped off the wall, wrapped around. Yes, Your Honor. And now he points out.
In general matter, with confessions that are just one or two lines, I did it. Just don't make the same impression with me as one where the details are volunteered and they're checked out as part of an overall evidentiary picture.
Yes, Your Honor. That was a lengthy confession. And that Detective Saul testified that he would not have known these facts.
The criminal offenses were set forth.
Yes, Your Honor. He the officer testified that he didn't know these. He would not have known these details had the defendant not told them to him during the confession.
So here's a person who gives a fairly detailed confession. The details are somewhat corroborated. He testifies extensively at trial.
Yes.
And he gives responses that are comprehending in terms of Miranda warnings to Mr. Holly. And you're supposed to overrule the state trial court, the MAR court, the district court, and whoever knows what else, and say this was unintelligent.
And then put Harrington versus Richter on top of that. It's just too much. It can't. This case can't survive Harrington versus Richter.
Statement that he made, or confession that he made pretty much immediately after he was arrested.
Yes, he was arrested, and then he asked to speak to the detective again.
When he was first brought in, he was given his rights, and he declined to sign the waiver, but also declined to talk to the officer.
He agreed to talk to the officer. He talked to him for an hour and a half.
I thought he declined to talk to him first and then asked for him to come back.
No, he talked to him for an hour and a half.
Okay.
He signed the acknowledgement, but didn't sign the waiver. But he never confessed during that first hour and a half of interrogation. Then, when the officer...
That's when he asked him for his shoes and he wouldn't give them up.
That's correct. Right. When he first came in, he wouldn't. And that again shows... You know, this man can assert his rights. He's asserted his rights.
Right, but then after that, there was an arrest warrant. Is that right?
Yes. Yes,
and then he was told he was
under arrest.
Charged with crime.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then, did he take an affirmative step then to ask to speak to the officer again?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
At that time, did he sign the waiver?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then he signed the waiver and talked to the officer.
And then talked to the officer. And said, some people need to be in prison, and then confessed. And the officer wrote out that he listened to him make the confession, then he wrote it out, and he asked him to look at it and read it, and he read it to him, and he initialed it twice and signed it. The state court adjudicated this claim square up on the merits. They didn't have the fine microscope on this to spread out the knowing and the MAR court. Adjudicated this issue straight up on the merits when it said that the court find, this is reading from the MAR, Joint Appendix 63 through 65, the court finds that the defendant's alleged mental disabilities would not have successfully supported a Fifth Amendment challenge to defendant's confession because there is no evidence either in the motion transcript or the trial transcript of any police misconduct. That adjudicated both the knowing and intelligent prong and the voluntariness prong, and it did it just the way that the Sixth Circuit did in Rice versus Cooper, and just the way, or excuse me, the Seventh Circuit did in Rice versus Cooper, and the same way that the Sixth Circuit did in en banc panel did in Garner versus Mitchell. Both of those federal circuit courts adjudicated the knowingness prong, made it contingent upon misconduct by the police. Okay, so the state court in this case did it.
Wait a minute, Judge Beatty didn't adopt that book line.
He didn't. No,
he went farther.
He didn't go along with that, and he had the evidentiary hearing. That's why this case is in such good shape right now. I mean, my gosh, he's got the deferential review, clearly got deferential review, and then we've got NOVO review.
Good shape. Good shape from your state.
It's in great shape from the state. You won't get a better. This, you won't find.
Raise any procedural bars or anything.
I've been doing habeas for a long time, Judge, and I've not had a better case than this in a long time.
What's the? Is there any issues about that Supreme Court case, Queller? What's that last?
Cullen versus.
Oh, Cullen.
Cullen.
Is there anything that did have any effect on any of the evidence that was submitted to Judge Beatty?
You know, if you're going to look at just what was in front of, that's what Cullen says. You just have to look at what was in front of
the state court.
In front of the state court. What was in front of the state court? The man's trial testimony of 20 to 30 pages long. Okay? The motion hearing, the suppression hearing, where Detective Saul testified that he slowly and carefully read the Miranda warnings to him twice, and that he had him verbally acknowledge each one, and that he told him he could read and told him he understood, and he appeared to be coherent. If this court focuses, so I think if Cullen and Cullen had come down, that Judge Beatty would have just dismissed this without an evidentiary hearing. There was substantial evidence to support.
So the point is that the I's have been dotted and the T's have been crossed.
Absolutely. And if Your Honor, is there any specific problem? Is there any specific question that this court would like for me to address in this matter?
No further questions.
One thing I would say is that this reference to Berghaus versus Tompkins, that's just a general statement. That's just a general rule that the waiver has to be knowing and voluntary. That goes way back. I mean, there's nothing new there in Berghaus versus Tompkins case. And, Your Honor, the decision of the district court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Cowan, we're pleased to hear you from you in rebuttal.
Your Honor, I almost confess the ineffective assistance of counsel because I do not believe I have convinced the court, number one, the Fifth Amendment.
Your advocacy is highly effective.
Well,
it's just that sometimes you get stuck with a tough case and you've got a lot of hurdles because you've got a trial and you've got all that trial testimony and then you've got MAR courts and then you've got Judge Beatty who held an evidentiary hearing and you've got these responses to Mr. Ali and it's just, and you've got overall the fact that this is on collateral review. Sometimes you just get stuck with a hard case.
May I tell you why I disagree with you?
Absolutely.
You don't think it's a hard case?
No, sir. I really do not. And let me tell you why. And I'm receptive, of course, and will respond to Your Honor's questions. Number one, the Fifth Amendment knowing an intelligent waiver of Mr. Bone's rights was never addressed by the trial court.
Wasn't expressly waived in the trial court, wasn't it?
By trial counsel saying
it explicitly disclaimed a Fifth Amendment.
It's a Fourth Amendment.
But the trial court sort of saved it, though, didn't it?
Well,
in fairness to the trial court.
Well, the trial court talked about government.
First of all, he bailed on the Fifth Amendment claim.
Okay, I will concede, Your Honor, that if you look at the standard nomenclature. Language that Judge Steelman used, he included all the magic words, but the claim was not presented to him. And so let me go to Judge Wilkinson and Judge Agee's comment. I don't intend to leave you out, Judge King, in joining the panel. But what was not presented to the MAR judge, and I go with what the state read. If you look at Joint Appendix page 65, Judge Craig says, the court finds that defendant's alleged mental disabilities would not have successfully supported a Fifth Amendment challenge to defendant's confession because there is no evidence either in the motion transcript or in the trial transcript of any police misconduct. What Judge Craig did was address the first prong of voluntariness and government coercion, he never addressed, and Judge Wilkinson, I'm going to come back and make one more effort I don't think the United States Supreme Court envisioned that lawyers or judges would determine whether a defendant is mentally capable of to waive his Miranda rights. And the reason we presented this evidence to both Judge Beatty and Judge Craig through Dr. Ali is, I'm not saying just because an expert says something you have to accept it, but if you look at Dr. Ali's evidence, and it begins, as I said earlier, on Joint Appendix 122 through the end, what Dr. Ali says, not only there's a comprehension error level problem in both the Miranda rights, and let me pause on the confession. The confession written out by Detective Saul weeks after investigating the claim was written at a fifth grade level that Mr. Bone could not comprehend. So I will concede to you, yes, the confession had all the elements of the crime acquired by Detective Saul and written by Detective Saul, not understood by Mr. Bone, clearly in Dr. Ali's testimony.
But Detective Saul tied it up. He said, I wrote it down. He was doing the writing. He was the scrivener. And he sort of put it in his own words. And he said, this is what the fellow said.
Detective Saul, this is said, this is what Mr. Bone said.
Right.
Mr. Bone could not understand, didn't have the reading comprehension level. So we're stuck with what Detective Saul says that Mr. Bone could not read. And you have in Ollie's testimony that when Mr. Bone signed the statement, he was agreeing that that was what Detective Saul said. Now, number two, and Judge Wilkinson, there were several questions about this. If you look at Dr. Ali's comments about the Miranda warning that was supposed to be clear and convincing, he thought by Mr. Bone thought by signing the form, he was requesting a label, a lawyer. He also insisted that the judge would lock up a defendant who refused to answer questions. Mr. Bone consistently indicated that a person who refused to say anything to the police would have that held against him. He thought that by signing the waiver form, it indicated that he wanted a lawyer. This is not a case where someone understood the Miranda warning. All of the evidence before the MAR court is that Mr. Bone did not make a knowing and intelligent waiver. And I come back and end from this court's decision in Robinson. There is evidence in the record that Mr. Bone did not understand the rights that were given, and he is alleged to waive. And so I say, if you look at Spring, you look at Tompkins, you look at this court's decision in Robinson, I do rest on the facts that show that Mr. Bone did not have the capacity and did not make a knowing and intelligent waiver because he was not aware of the facts. And he did not understand the consequences of this waiver.
Well, we thank you, and we appreciate very much your commitment to your
thank
case
you.
And the manner in which you presented it.
Thank you.